One of the most beautiful places in the world to me is Sylvan Lake and the Needles Highway in the Black Hills of South Dakota, just 20 minutes from where I grew up. Granite spires over 2 billion years old wind a road that climbs quickly from 3,000 to 7,000 feet in elevation. Among the hikes in this area is a secret hike called Poet's Table. One must know a local to get to the spot. Directions sound like: walk 100 paces past the footbridge, turn west and walk until you see the charred aspen, turn north until you reach the fallen pine tree, and so on. The hike's surprise at the top, short but steep and tucked between these granite fingers, sits a green dining room table, a small hutch, and four chairs. Carved into the table and penned into the tablets, visitors' poems, artwork, and mementos, all expressions of life and love and hope. This was the hike where Carter, my 17-year-old son, my niece, my sister, and I spent our last time together. My sister Melanie made a wishing box for visitors to add hope for the future. Luckily, Skye, my niece and Carter's best friend, wrote her wish alongside Carter's. His wish was for the world to have more love. Not a fast car or to be signed by a D1 lacrosse program, but a hope for more love, to soften the sharp edges with empathy and kindness. I remember walking to the cliff's rim that day, enjoying the vast skyline of the Black Hills. Carter, did you know those two spires touching across the ravine are called praying hands? Carter wrapped his arm over my shoulder and nodded, "Yeah, Mom, pretty great day, huh?" Yep, it sure was. Carter was murdered just 3 days later alongside his friend Natalie Henderson. Wrong time and place, evil struck, and these two bright lights were extinguished behind a Publix on the street with million-dollar homes on August 1st, 7 years ago, early in the morning before Carter was supposed to start his first day of his senior year. So many people tell me, "I don't know how you do it. How do you go on after such a horrific trauma? What carries you through each day? In fact, what even gets you out of bed?" My answer: I put one foot in front of the other because of my love for my son, my faith, and my drive to find joy again. Yes, even amid great grief. I wish there was a magic potion, a wand I could wave over all of us to give strength when the unthinkable occurs. I wish I could wave that wand over all of us so that the unthinkable never happens in the first place. But there isn't one, and I can't. So instead, I think of my son's crooked smile, the way he lived life all in. He was an incredible athlete and student, but more than that, he was really kind. Carter wasn't worried that his lacrosse teammates might think he was a brown noser for helping his coaches set up equipment before practice or for shaking the ref's hand after each game. He didn't worry about what his advisory buddies would think of him when he helped a quiet girl who normally sat alone study for every math test his junior year. And he never worried about what his peers would think when he'd give me a huge sweaty hug after his football games before telling me, "I love you, Mom." I think these things because they're my magic wand, and there are others. I remember the afternoon after Carter died, I looked at Jeremy, my husband, and said, "How are we going to do this? How can we ensure our 8-year-old Greta is going to be okay?" He shook his head slowly through tears, then said, "With faith, there's nothing else." That afternoon, we had our first meeting with the detectives. The killer was still on the loose. We had to hear so many tough details. To say it was traumatic is an understatement. The police left, and Jeremy, Greta, and I went on the porch. Jeremy held all of us. We cried, and then Jeremy told our daughter Greta to watch and listen, that God would send us blessings from Carter, that he didn't quite know how all this worked, but that we needed to watch for pennies and feathers and dragonflies, who knows what, but to watch for these signs, letting us know Carter was okay. "Dad," Greta said, "maybe Carter will send a dog." "Yeah, I can see Carter loving that, as you sure love to chase balls. I don't know. I see him as a hawk or an eagle soaring high above us." The next day, incredible things happened. I was sharing devastating details with my parents and sisters when a beautiful yellow and black monarch butterfly landed right by us. Its 4-inch wings opened and closed. We all cried because we instantly remembered all the times Carter would catch butterflies. This particular one stayed over 10 minutes, and we laughed and cried, then it darted through the trees as if it were showing off. That night, we had a vigil at Carter School. Family and friends surround a tall tree with a table and on it a 4-foot-tall lacrosse picture of Carter, so that when the other lacrosse players lined around his image, it was as if he was there. My dad welcomed and thanked everyone for coming and read a beautiful, prayerful tribute to Carter, his faith, and friendships. As my dad spoke, a hawk swooped in overhead, screeching, and landed on the tree behind him. The hawk stayed there, and when my dad finished speaking, it flew across the crowd. With tears streaming, we could not believe our eyes. Greta and my niece, Skye, had moved to the long sidewalk to write chalk messages about how they would miss Carter and Natalie. High school students moved over as well and added more notes, and soon came the hawk, about 10 feet above the students, soaring silently with little swallows chirping behind just over their heads. A week later, at our first lacrosse pickup game, one of Carter's teammates from South Dakota flew in for the game. He wore Carter's helmet and jersey. In the middle of passing and racing to score, players started yelling at Nate. Everyone stopped, and sure enough, a yellow butterfly had landed on Carter's helmet. And I know this sounds unbelievable, but 30 minutes later, a hawk landed on the goalpost, just stopping by to watch the game. We continue to see butterflies in surprising places and hawks on green interstate signs, on our back porch, mailboxes, fences, light poles, front yard. I could go on and on. These God winks comfort us, and we indeed smile. Recently, Carter has made his presence felt in a most unexpected, incredible way. I have taught Slater Nally for 2 years now. While my first impressions of Slater were shaped by his wild shenanigans as a sophomore, they quickly changed the day I shared about Carter. In front of his peers, he thanked me for sharing Carter's story, saying he couldn't imagine how tough it was to lose him. I smiled as it reminded me of Carter. Slater didn't care what his peers might think about him offering quick comfort to a teacher. He just gave it because he knew it mattered. This fall, the English and social studies teachers had the opportunity to take a writing workshop. In one session, I wrote a poem in honor of Carter. A week later, I asked Slater, knowing he was writing new songs, about his process of turning a poem into music. Slater immediately wanted to see the poem. He snapped a photo and asked if he could work on it a bit. 2 weeks later, he surprised his fourth period classmates and me by playing a song written in memory of Carter called Traces of You. So, back to the question. How do you navigate deep grief? Well, if you're me, you let others embrace you. You look for hawks and butterflies. You tell your story. There's no one roadmap, that's for sure. And just like the hike to Poet's Table in the Black Hills, life often lacks official directions. But there are guides, locals who point out the footbridges, the charred aspens, the fallen pines. Your guides might be a teacher or coach you connect with, a grandfather or aunt, a cousin or best friend. Watch for how others deal with hard times. All of us face hardships. Look for those who live in lightness and joy. Watch what they do and copy it. You might find someone to help you turn your sadness into a song. Today, I'm standing here still shaking a bit, nervous to give the sermon, but choosing to lean in like Carter and Slater did, so I can share a bit of this tough and beautiful journey. The first reading gives me such comfort as we found the verse written on athletic tape on Carter's helmet. I remember Carter and a buddy picking that verse so sincerely. The second reading grounds me, as it reminds me that Carter is okay. And the third quote, my parents, sisters, and niece had arrived after Carter's death. We all sobbed and hugged, and in a quiet moment, my dad sat with me on the couch. He grabbed my hand and recited Psalm 23. Choosing to look where God was in this dark valley became my goal. I have learned that yes, it's important to give thanks and praise for our blessings, but students, I hope in dark moments you can turn to your guides to find something bigger than you and seek the light. Thank you, Slater, for this lifelong gift of song. Poof! There we are.